You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Friday morning to you. Michael McNamara for a Friday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it. Hope so far your Friday is better than mine. Yeah, I'm in the collection business now, and it sucks trying to get money out of the federal government. Unbelievable. So that's what I've been doing this morning. It's about 5 o'clock. You want to know where I've gotten? Nowhere. What I've been told is that it's my responsibility. Oh, yeah, that's not our responsibility to pay you. Like, what? So anyway, good morning to you. Yesterday, I had the opportunity to go down to School of Infantry and talk to some squad leaders and platoon commanders and platoon sergeants that work at MCT, and I taught a class that I developed years ago about decision making, and then I work a little post traumatic winning into it. So it was a good time. It was a good time. MCT is the block of training that every Marine goes through after they get out of boot camp. So get out of recruit training, and then they go to MCT, and then off to their MOS school. So you have people acting as platoon sergeants, and these Marines are now Marines working for the first time in their lives. So they have a great opportunity to influence people. Right. So went down there and did that yesterday. And as always, it's fun to be around Marines, fun to talk to them, and fun to listen to them. So want to thank Captain Eric Cebulski for having me down there, and hopefully look forward to doing it again. So, yeah, post-traumatic winning. Going to get around Southern California a little bit, out to the desert in June with 25th Marines. In July, going to be at MCRD. In August, back to Camp Pendleton. So, so fired up about doing that and working on publishing a book about it and standing up a 501c3. So the All Marine Radio thing continues to grow here as we as it gets bigger and better, and so it's exciting. It's exciting. So so that's what's going on there. Plans for the weekend. I don't have too many. Colleen's got to go to my daughter, who's a sophomore in high school. She has to go to some certification program so that she can help in case of a civil emergency. So I want to say 4 hours tonight and then 8 hours on Saturday and Sunday. Yeah. So she can get her civil defense pin. That's right. And so she can be one of the leaders and not one of the led when a disaster strikes. Which is good. I like that. I like that. So, but so I'll be kind of in overwatch of all that. I'm not going. She said, well, I'm in learn how to do some first aid stuff. I said, I can teach you that. Lay on the ground. She said, no, no. I said, lay on the ground. She said, no, please stop. So, so we'll be doing that. So I'll probably be working and, I got the major lawn care events done last week and I might do some minor lawn care stuff. And, but excuse me. Yeah. Like I said, that's minor. It won't take me any time. That means I'll watch the Yankees a little bit and probably do some writing. So that's what the, let's see, the third weekend in May looks like. That's right. So, yeah, not too much good news on the forecast, man. Yeah, the whole collection business with the DOD and different units, oh, my God, it's just so painful. And it's like dealing with the travel stuff. You know, depending on the competency of who you're dealing with, oh, God, it's just horrible. So... yeah, the collection business. It's not the glamorous business that you think it is. Yes, trust me. Trust me. So, anyway, Whitney Houston gets the morning going and, she will sing the national anthem this morning as she does on Friday. So, good morning to you. Yeah. Have you ever seen any of the reality series that she was in? Did you ever see any of that? Yeah, you know, it was the side of her that nobody, if you were a fan, if you enjoyed her voice and whatnot, it was a side of her that you didn't see. And then you'd see it and you're like, what is that? That's Whitney Houston? And honestly, it was hard to believe that that was, you know, that was the same girl who we saw singing and dancing in movies and whatnot. And so, it was amazing. She was in it with her husband, Bobby Brown. And, you know, he got blamed for what happened to her. And then you hear her friends saying, it wasn't his fault. That was her. She was in it every bit as much as he was. But if you saw it, it was stunning, the dichotomy between what her public image was and what she was. Yeah, she was, she would fit right in with any of the hip-hop artists with their lyrics and whatnot and their language. She would fit in with any of that. Yet her public persona was cultivated to be vastly different. You know, her public persona was beautiful, innocent, black girl, mother, sang in the choir, aunt, who was her aunt? Big T, beautiful woman. Come on. Her mother's name is Sissy. Her aunt's name is Dionne Warwick. There you have it. Yeah, so it's this, the persona that we saw, completely invented for her voice. Yeah, pretty crazy. Anyway, this dedicated to the instructors, the platoon commanders, platoon sergeants down at MCT some of whom I met yesterday, and appreciate their graciousness in listening to the decision. And a short discussion about what post-traumatic winning is. So it's dedicated to them. Good luck. Don't be afraid to touch people's lives and change it for the better.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
during firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Neller's almost done. I'm going to read you an email that I got after we checked the weather in Marineland here. But I want to read you an email that somebody sent me yesterday. All right. Weather. Cloud in 67 in Quantico, Virginia. Partly cloudy in 82 at Camp Lejeune. It is sunny in 59 in 29 Palms, which is cool. Cloudy in 58 at Camp Pendleton. At Camp Smith in Hawaii, it is cloudy in 75. In Okinawa, it's cloudy 76. In the Al Anbar province of Iraq, partly cloudy and 101 degrees. Wow, that's right. In the Helmand province of Afghanistan, it is dark, cloudy, and 83 degrees there early in the evening. So, that is at the home of All Marine Radio, it is cloudy and 60 degrees, headed for sunny skies and 69 today. Tomorrow, 70, and on Sunday, rain again. Rain Saturday night, rain on Sunday. So, let me read you an email here, and that somebody sent me. Stand by. Mac, I'm a longtime listener, and I've emailed you several times. I know you're not on the air right now. I've been reading some disturbing comments on YouTube about the present-day Marine Corps. Marines who were in during the 90s and early 2000s saying the Corps is getting softer. I can say I'm an old Corps Marine, 1973 to 1977. Those are tough years. I served under two hardcore World War II commandants, General Cushman and General Wilson. My commanding general at Parris Island was future commandant, Major General Barrow. So I know what it's like to serve under hard old Corps, old salts, and old school Marines. General Neller was also in the Corps as a second lieutenant when I was in the Corps. Finally, General Dunford and I were both born in 1955 and in the Corps, too, at about the same time. I said all that to say this. Do you think the present-day Marine Corps has lowered its standards in boot camp and OCS since the 1970s? Compared to today's boot camp and OCS, I do not want to accept that, sir. We are set apart from other branches of the service. I want to feel that present-day Marines are as tough as all Marines before. Marines from the trenches of France in World War I, Marines from Guadalcanal, Iwo Jima, Okinawa in World War II, Marines from Incheon in the Korean War, the jungles of Vietnam. When I was on Okinawa in April of 1975, the evacuation of Saigon in May 75, and Second Lieutenant Dan Hoffman, the Battle of Koh Tang Island, and Marines like you who have served in the desert. Do you think the Corps has lowered its standards? Thank you. Always enjoy your podcast. He got out as a sergeant. And so I read it out to say this. The discussion about discipline in the Marine Corps is a big deal. In my opinion, it's a big, big, big deal. Because is the Marine Corps softer? I would say the Marine Corps is certainly smarter. Okay? Smart, how important is smart? Right? That's a good question. How important is smart? The Marine Corps has always made its money on toughness. Right? Smart is a part of it. Okay, smart is a part of it. But the Marine Corps has always been about being tough. I would tell you Marines are certainly smarter. Okay. The training they get is probably better than we've ever had in our history before. I would tell you what's changed is, in my opinion, and why this discussion about discipline is so important, is that our culture, as it always does, certainly bleeds into the Marine Corps, right? Our Marines all come from that culture. So, obviously, that's something that goes on every day in the Marine Corps. How much of this culture that doesn't do discipline, that doesn't do consequences, can you accept? And I think, again, and I've said this before, but look around the DOD. I mean, we'll talk about stories here in a few minutes. A Navy SEAL pleads guilty to his part in the strangulation of a Green Beret in Mali. What? That's in the news today. So, to me, there is this thing that's bled into the DOD that, you know, you don't really have to be these things. This is kind of your job, but, you know, you can be what you want to be online, under the cloak of anonymity, you can do what you want to do while you're in the military. And, you know, and I think, just like for kids, when kids realize that they don't have to really do what their parents say when they leave the house, it's one of the worst things that ever happened for a kid. You know, those rules that my mom and dad have, they don't really apply to me here. I can do whatever I want. And so when long arm and parenting doesn't go with a kid, right, trouble ensues. When the long arm of the values and what you're doing in the military doesn't go with the person in the military, you got problems. And I think the DOD and every branch of the service, whether they care to admit it or not, has problems. has problems. And so there needs to be a discussion, a general discussion about discipline, why we do it, and what it has to be. And what it has to be in order for this thing to work. Because it can't be when you get around to it. It can't be when you're in the mood to do it. It's got to be day on, stay on, ready, maintained, good to go, leaning forward. That's the way it works. And there's a certain process that gets you there. And if you turn your back on those things, you know, bad things are going to happen. So I share that email with you because it's interesting because there's a lot of people that are very, very interested in the subject. And I think one of the interesting things about it is that as the discussion matures and it meanders both into what's going on inside active forces, it also has implications for businesses. The lessons learned out of the military always get applied throughout our culture. How do you do this thing? How do you do it smarter? How do you sit down and discuss it before you do it? How do you have to frame it to make it make sense? Is that what we're talking about? So, anyway. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll check news headlines on a Friday. The chef's going to join us in about 37 minutes. We're going to talk about chicken fajitas. That's right. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it. The one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back. When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I want to walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and so be made.
8:31 on a Friday morning. Check the news now. Listen to this story. This story sucks. Navy SEAL Team 6 member sentenced to a year in prison for his role in the death of a Green Beret. A year in prison. Stars and Stripes. Navy SEAL Chief Petty Officer Adam Matthews will spend the next year in a military prison after pleading guilty Thursday for his actions. Hopefully we'll get to the charge. For his actions in the 2017 strangulation death of a Green Beret in Mali. In admitting guilt, Matthews described a botched attempt to haze Army Staff Sergeant Logan Melger alongside three other special operators serving in the Malian capital city of Bamako in the early morning of June 4, 2017. Matthews described the plan hatched at a local restaurant over late-night drinks and food as juvenile. He said he and the others conspired to break into Melger's private room with a sledgehammer, restrain him with duct tape, and film him in order to embarrass him. Melger's death was a result of a chokehold by a Navy SEAL Chief Petty Officer Tony DeDolph, according to prosecutors. Matthews, 33 years old, told the judge overseeing his court-martial, Navy Captain Michael Lucan, that Melger's death was tragic but completely unintended. He accepted a deal from prosecutors to avoid murder charges during the court-martial at Naval Station Norfolk in Virginia, agreeing to plead guilty to charges that he conspired to commit an assault and battery, unlawful entry, obstructed justice by lying to investigators about who was involved in Melger's death. And for all of that, he got a year in jail. What the fuck, man? Matthews told Lucan's the presiding officer, that the group had not intended to kill Melger, but they wanted to remediate him for perceived performance issues and a slight from the previous night, accusing him of abandoning two Marines in an area of Bamako with which they were unfamiliar. Quote, words cannot express how deeply I regret those events and how remorseful I am, Matthew said. The Navy expected me to be a leader. I am tormented by my complacency at a time when my teammates required my guidance and the situation required bold corrective action. Following an all-day hearing, Lucan determined Matthews, who has served with the Navy Special Warfare Development Group, better known as SEAL Team 6, since 2005, would spend a year in prison for his involvement in the death of Melger. He also sentenced Matthews to a two-grade reduction in rank to Petty Officer Second Class and a bad conduct discharge. The bad conduct discharge is the most significant of all of it. The year-long prison sentence was the maximum confinement that Matthews faced as part of his plea deal with prosecutors. a pretty good plea deal at the end of the day. Only a year in jail for that shit? I mean, what kind of justice is that? A year in jail for what he did. I mean, listen to... So, he agreed to plead guilty to charges. He conspired to commit the assault and to battery, unlawful entry, obstructing justice by lying to investigators. For all of that, he got a year. Matthews is the first of four special operators who will face a judge in Melger's death. As part of his plea agreement, Matthews agreed to testify in the cases of the other accused service members in Melger's death. The Dolph Marine Raider Gunnery Sergeant Mario Madera Rodriguez and Staff Sergeant Kevin Maxwell Jr. Those cases have yet to go to trial and face similar charges as Matthews, including murder. That's a different charge. Witnesses called to testify Thursday by prosecutors described a poor climate among the small group of special operators stationed in Bamako. Family members and others who served with Melger testified the Special Forces soldiers struggled to get along with the Navy SEALs and Marine Raiders who he worked near since his arrival in Mali in early February of 2017. His widow, Michelle Melger, told the judge as soon as she learned of his death, just hours after the two had spoken on the phone, she immediately suspected the SEALs were to blame, even as an Army official told her that he died of an illness, an assertion that was later disproven. The Army has big problems telling us the truth when shit goes wrong. You would think after the Pat Tillman thing, they would learn, look, if you don't know, don't say anything. Here the guy's strangled, and some Army officials tells his wife that he died of an illness. Quote, he told me, her husband told her, the SEALs were immature, doing immature things. She indicated the doll, the Marine, the SEAL who strangled him, was one of the men with whom her husband struggled. Matthews, who had only arrived in Mali one day before Melger's death, had only met the Green Beret for about 30 minutes before entering his residence to haze him. Pretty amazing. I mean, honestly, we talk about culture, why culture is important. I mean, think about that. You're a chief petty officer in the Navy. And you arrive, the same day you arrive, you meet somebody once, and then you bust into his room to teach him a lesson because that's what's going on? I told you, it's a sick culture, man. It's a sick culture. And that's why this whole discussion of what discipline is and is not. Soldiers who served with Melger described him as a driven and mature soldier who stood out even among the elite in the Special Forces community, challenging the SEALs' assertion that Melger was performing inadequately. Quote, Staff Sergeant Melger was somebody the Army definitely needed to retain, testified the Special Forces commander. He was going to be a leader in the future. Melger, his commander said, was a battle-proven man of high character who, during a deployment to Afghanistan, would lead dangerous missions to search for roadside bombs on foot from the very front, often taking machine gun fire as he doggedly pored over the terrain for signs of hidden explosives. He was our hero, his wife said. SEALs who served along Matthews offered a similar assertion about the 16-year Navy veteran, whose service includes 8 combat tours that have resulted in 4 Valor Awards, including 2 Bronze Star Medals with Combat Vs and a Purple Heart. Matthews was described in similar words. Quote, Chief Matthews is a hero, said retired Rear Admiral Christian Reismeyer, Matthews' civilian attorney. Reismeyer asked Lucan for leniency for one horrific mistake in a long career otherwise characterized by exemplary service. Matthews said he was truly sorry, apologizing to members of Melger's family. Well, Michelle Melger told Matthews that she forgave him for his role in her husband's death. Melger's mother, Nitza Melger, said she wished he would spend the rest of his life behind bars. "You, sir, are a murderer," she said. "I personally wish you were going to prison for the rest of your life. You are a disgrace to your Purple Heart. May God have mercy on you." How about that? So that's the lead story in Stars and Stripes. Number two story is 12 treated after F-16 crashes through a warehouse roof in California. This is out by March Air Force Base in Riverside, where the 1st Marine Division and most of the units of 1MAF come and go from Iraq and Afghanistan. And there's a photo. The photo that goes with it is a photo of a hole in the roof of some kind of industrial building, taken by KABC TV, it's a helicopter, where an F-16 fighter jet crashed into a warehouse. That can't, that's not where the jet crashed. That might be where the seat crashed. But if an F-16 crashed, it wouldn't, the hole wouldn't look like that. Just outside March Air Reserve Base in Riverside, California. Major Perry Covington, Director of Public Affairs, said the pilot ejected before the crash and was not hurt, and there are no immediate reports of injuries on the ground. Well, the jet plowed through the roof of a large warehouse near the base. I can't believe that, though. Well, there's a parachute, so that must be a hole that the jet left. That doesn't seem right to me, man. An F-16? So there's a hole in the roof that goes down. I don't know. Television news showed a large hole in the roof and sprinklers on inside the building about 65 miles east of Los Angeles. Cell phone photos and video from inside show what appears to be the tail of the plane buried in twisted metal and piles of cardboard boxes. Now, that might have happened. That might have been the tail, but if the airplane falls in, it doesn't look like that. Next thing I know, I just hear an explosion and turn around to the back of the building, and I just see a burst of flames and just the ceiling start falling through every part of the building. I turned around and my coworker just told me to get, so I made a run for it. Daniel Gallegos said he believed one of his coworkers was lucky by something, was struck by something, possibly falling fire sprinkler, but wasn't seriously hurt. The crash happened when a pilot was landing following a routine training mission. The pilot was having hydraulic problems, spokesman said, started losing control of the aircraft. The jet's cockpit canopy was on the runway, and a parachute had settled in a nearby field. Damage to the warehouse was relatively minor, and there was no major fire, which Holiday called a miracle. Yeah, come on. Anyway, if you take a look at it in the news, just do F-16 crash, March Air Force Base, Air Reserve Base, whichever you prefer. And it shows the top of a warehouse with, like, the roof, like, minimally damaged and a hole. So, anyway, I don't know. It's kind of a mystery, if you want to know the truth. Interesting story, kind of a feature story in Stars and Stripes. A separate war, pioneering black Marines endured and prevailed. Talks about Marines that joined the Marine Corps to serve in World War II, what they went through. Same thing happened in Korea, same thing happened in Vietnam. One more story that pretty interesting. Pretty interesting story is an airstrike kills 17 in southern Afghanistan. Now, when we talk southern Afghanistan, we talk about Helmand Province, and that's where Task Force Southwest is. Afghan officials say an airstrike killed 17 policemen by mistake during a battle with Taliban just outside the provincial capital of Lashkargah in the country's southern Helmand province. Atulia Afghan, head of the provincial council, says the airstrike took place on Thursday as Afghan police were fighting the Taliban near the city. He also said 14 policemen were wounded in the strike. 17 killed and 14 wounded. Holy shit. It wasn't immediately clear who carried out the airstrike, Afghan or U.S. forces. There was no immediate response to a query to the U.S. military in Kabul. Helmand's governor, Mohammad Yassim, says the airstrike is being investigated. The Taliban statement claimed U.S. forces were behind it. That stuff's not a little bit frustrating. One more headline. U.S. and Finnish soldiers go head-to-head with Marines and in a mock armored vehicle battle. Yeah, so 2nd Marine Division up in Finland doing some fighting up there. So good luck to them. The news out of Marine Corps Times. Now, this story the story in Stars and Stripes is referred to, that murder is referred to hazing in the headline. Okay, look, I know what hazing is, all right? I don't think what happened in Mali is hazing. That's just me, you know. I could be wrong. Normally, I'm not. Here's another headline. I talked about the story yesterday. At least 8 Marine Corps drill instructors punished over hazing claims. Now, it says the Associated Press, but actually the writer is Dan Lamont, who writes for the Washington Post. Right? And it's oddly enough, all the stories come out of the 4th Recruit Training Battalion, which is all female. So I don't know what the nature of the Freedom of Information Act request was, that it was, I need information or, I'm looking into and I want any document related to abuse of recruits in the 4th Recruit Training Battalion. I don't know because every one of them is a 4th Recruit Training Battalion. Anyway, the Marine Corps has punished at least 8 drill instructors amid allegations of hazing and abuse in a Paris Island at a training center in Paris Island. Okay. Now, what the story talked about was there was 8 allegations over the course of, I want to say, 4 years. So it's like 2 a year. So you read it, and again, like most things, the headline paints this picture, right? So it's clickbait. And then you begin to read the story. And so what we're talking about is one instructor is accused of shoving a recruit and chipping her tooth. So the recruit's got a hold of a rifle. You know, drill instructors, you know, move it. You know, they're moving someplace, right? And in the course of that, right, arm gets shoved, rifle moves, hits somebody in the tooth, chips a tooth. That's hazing. And it's stupid. It's stupid. The other one is stupid, but when you see the response that a recruit was forced to put underwear with feces in it on her head, right? So that was a headline or you see the response from the investigation was there was no feces in her underwear. She had left her underwear underneath her rack. Drill instructor said, yeah, if I have you put it on your head, you'll probably remember where it is, won't you? The allegation then is, yeah, there was a skid mark in my underwear and I had to put it on my head. So feces soiled underwear, right? I mean, this, in my opinion, this stuff is a joke. If those are the most severe abuses of recruits that come out of that, then that whole article is absolutely ridiculous. And to call the event in Mali hazing, that's ridiculous too. So I saw those two stories and I thought, you know, it's some of the stuff that you see, you know, just remember this, people are getting paid to write stories. And sometimes, some days are slow news days, right? Some days are slow news day. The story written by Todd South about the events in Mali, quote his mother a little bit more. Reading from a prepared statement, Nitza Melgar told Matthews that he was not a 17-year-old college frat boy out for a night on a lark when he, a fellow Navy SEAL and two Marine Raiders, busted down Melgar's bedroom door with a sledgehammer, pounced on him, and began binding him with duct tape before he began to asphyxiate and spit up blood. Logan was asleep, Nitza said. He was attacked, and minutes later he was dead. You, sir, are a murderer. Logan's blood will never wash off you. And then he writes about essentially the same thing about her husband, how much she wanted to come home. He was a professional, how he didn't like working with the SEALs or the Raiders, thought they were immature, doing immature things, which is prototypically them. Then she got a knock on her door. A chaplain and an army officer stood at the door. They told her Logan had been sick and had been found convulsing in bed. You're lying to me, she told them. Only hours before they talked, he was fine. He wasn't sick. And the lies continued. Weeks and months passed. At a unit memorial, she learned that an army investigation into the death had been handed off to the Naval Navy Criminal Investigative Service. She had her suspicions, she said, based on her husband's messages. She didn't trust the SEALs, he said. he was with, she said. Nobody was taking me seriously, she said. It was a very isolating place to be and a very lonely place. After the sickness explanation passed, she said she was told he died while doing combatives or self-defense training with SEALs in their residence. I just wanted the truth, she said. I knew he wasn't sick. I knew he wasn't doing combatives at 5 in the morning. What perplexed military judge Navy Captain Michael Lucan during the hearing, who asked Matthews how he perceived the party snub could be considered a deficiency worth remediation, specifically illegal hazing. Matthews explained that BOMCO was a semi-permissive environment in which service members would rarely travel alone. Matthews did say that the Dolph and others mentioned other incidents, but he did not testify to details about those. After the party snub, and this is evidently Melgar did not give them a ride someplace, the four defendants, one of which who just arrived in country that day, remember that, hatched a plan to bust down his door. Within minutes after his death, the four had a plan to hide what really happened, Matthews said, and Adolf would own it and not mention the Marines' involvement. So they told investigators the three men had been practicing self-defense training. They told them that Melgar had been drunk they told him other things that were not true. And the investigation, kept from the public for months after Melgar had died, dragged on. Michelle had no answers, only suspicions and an emptiness, a loss of the core of her family. In November of 2018, the four would be charged. Felony murder, involuntary manslaughter, conspiracy, obstruction of justice, hazing, and burglary. The three remaining co-defendants still face the charges. Just interesting. Just interesting. Just interesting and sad. Interesting and sad. All right. We're going to take a break. More of, we'll continue with the news as we move along here. Well, maybe we won't. Let me just go through early bird real quick. The two stories that are, the one story that I want to talk about was, Sean Snow, who writes for Marine Corps Times, wrote a story yesterday, the headline, Taliban fighters hid in a sewage tanker, used ladders to breach a major helmet base housing Marines and Afghan forces. This is the attack that happened on March 1st of the, what's called Shoreback, used to be called Leatherneck. On the March 1 assault by Taliban fighters against the generally perceived secure major military bases in Helmand, Afghanistan, will result in some of the first combat action ribbons for a small group of Marines whose primary task was advising Afghan forces. Some of the Marines assigned to the small advisor group, known as Task Force Southwest, aided Afghan forces in repelling the attack on the vitally important Camp Bastion base. That is the British side of the base, or was the British side of the base, which, according to the New York Times, was stormed by Taliban fighters hiding in sewage tankers, and by some militants who used ladders to scale walls and cross turf guarded by dozy patrollers. The New York Times also reported that Taliban fighters had spies on the base, an Afghan lieutenant colonel and a sergeant major who helped militants hide. The brazen assault by the outnumbered Taliban fighters called into question the state of disrepair and security of one of the most important Afghan military bases, which at the height of the war housed thousands of Marines and British troops and served as a focal point for America's strategy to secure the volatile Helmand province. I was there then. I was in it at Leatherneck, Shorebach, Bastion. It's all the same place. Leatherneck was obviously the Marine place. Bastion was where the Brits were, and Shorebach was the Afghan side of it. A U.S. military official with Operation Resolute Support said the U.S. side of the base was never under any real threat, and the American compound had its perimeter secured. More than 20 Afghan forces were killed in the attack, which ended after hours of fighting, and the aid of U.S. air support. Following the breach, New York Times reported, citing American and Afghan officials, Taliban fighters took Afghan troops hostage, forcing them to guide the militants towards the command center where American troops were working. Anyway, so first details about that attack that we've seen in public. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, the chef joins us. So he wants to talk about chicken fajitas today. So we will get him on the blower today, and we'll do a little food talk. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. The food segment here on a Friday gets going here in a few minutes. Again, if I'd be curious, go ahead and look at the picture of the warehouse. If that's the damage that a whole intact in-flight F-16 did to a building, then I don't know what to say. To me, I would have said that's either the ejector seat did that, or it, evidently, I don't know. I don't know. That's not the damage that F-16 does. It crashes into a building, though. I'd be curious if you're an aviator, take a look at that. And the other thing I'll end with is that this discussion about discipline is so important. It's so important because, you know, the stories that you see, whether they are, you know, the strangling somebody, right? Are we that out of control? Are we that far? Have we lost it by that much that the rules don't apply? That a guy who's a chief who shows up will participate in something like this, although he hasn't even been there for 24 hours before he says, all right, stop. We're not doing that. All right. Forget about it. I'll sit down and talk to him. All right. I'll take care of this. So, I mean, I'd say it's moderately disturbing, but it's more than that. All right. More of Armoring Radio coming up. The chef joins us next, so whatever you do, don't touch that dial.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.